www.thebeatsmusic.com. And now, time for stage and studio.
I'm DMA Roberts, stage and studio. You're listening to the end credit music from the documentary of And So We Walked by Delana Studi. It's an historic moment in Oregon. Three indigenous female playwrights' works are being produced by the three top theater companies in Oregon this spring. We'll hear about Delana Studi's play, And So We Walked, at Portland Center Stage at the Armory running through May 13th, and Larissa Fast Horse's The Thanksgiving Play at Artist Repertory Theater on April, well, it started April 1st, and is running through April 29th. And we'll hear about Manahatta by Mary Catherine Nagel at Oregon Shakespeare Festival running through October 27th. An important conversation is about to happen right here on Stage and Studio. Hey, hey, hey. Hey. I'm DMA Roberts. With me in the KABU studio are playwrights Delana Studi. Welcome.
OCO, thank you.
And Larissa Fasthorse, welcome. And it's great to have you both on stage and studio. Delana, I know you've worked at Portland Center Stage in the Astoria Play Project for a couple years now, right?
Yes, that's correct.
But Larissa, is this your first time in Portland?
It's my first production in Portland, yeah.
First production, but you've been here before.
Yeah, I've been coming here for a couple years now.
Well, it's great to have you both here, and I understand you both have connected with each other probably many times in the past, right?
For a very long time, yeah.
Yes.
We've worked together in many different ways and many projects.
Well, so it's kind of cool that you're both here in Portland at the same time, though, right? Yeah, because it wasn't, like, planned.
No, it's such a wonderful surprise.
It was a convergence, and and it just happened, which I love. I love that it just happened. It is a convergence of Indigenous women playwrights here in Oregon. And do you both know of any other states where this has happened, where three, Indigenous women had their plays produced roughly around the same time?
Not that we're aware of.
I think it's the first.
I don't know about that for sure.
Yeah, I want to shy away from that.
Yeah, that's true.
There's been
allegedly.
There's a long, long, deep history of Native American theater that hasn't necessarily been recognized, though, by Western theater and by the means that Delana and Mary Catherine and I have been very fortunate to be recognized. So we don't want to necessarily say that.
So it may
that.
Not be a mainstream theater thing that, I mean, it may be a mainstream theater thing now, but it probably has happened in the past. Could have.
It could have, yeah.
Yes.
It just wasn't recognized in the way that we've been so fortunate to get national attention for this.
That is so great, though, that you have gotten national attention. And American Theater Magazine actually focused that on this convergence not too long ago, too. And we're about to Facebook Live it. For those of you who are following us online, you can go to Facebook Live and see all the playwrights here in this room. Hello, everybody. Just go to the KABU page and you'll see us all right now live. I'd like to start off with Delana. I have to tell you that I've been a great fan of your uncles. And I'm sure you've heard this before, Wes Studi. And, I kind of fell in love with him when he played Geronimo. And more recently, he was a presenter on the Oscars, which was also historic, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, they don't keep track of who has presented before, so we're not quite sure if he was the first, but once again, it's one of those situations.
It's where it could have been. could have been, but it was a great moment.
It was a wonderful moment for us.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure for your entire family, definitely.
Oh, yes. Well, I was actually working with him in North Carolina for the Museum of the Sequoia Birthplace whenever he got the call that they were changing it. Originally, he was going to be co-presenting with Laura Dern, and they offered him this special moment to present by himself. So we had a moment of like, should he take it? Should we? And it was a lot of fun having to be part of that decision making, but yes.
Oh, wow. It was great just to see him there. And you've been performing your play, And So We Walked, at Portland Center Stage. And what's been the response so far?
I always joke that I, have low expectations so we can exceed them. But it's been well received.
That's always a good philosophy.
I was very fortunate. We've had two previews, and then we were in great enough shape that we actually had an invited dress for our dress rehearsal. So we've had three audiences so far. And it's been so well received, and the word of mouth is getting out. And a lot of the Native community have already come out to see the show, and you know, I've gotten their mark of endorsement, which is wonderful. But of course, we also have a lot of non-Native people who see the show who aren't aware of the history and aren't aware of the struggle. My show deals with historical trauma and intergenerational trauma and how we overcome trauma as a people. And it's kind of fun for me being on the stage because, you know, not only did I write, I'm also performing it. And I get to hear the audience reactions. And so on many occasions, you'll hear like, or yeah. What? Yeah. What did she say? Did that really happen? And right. It's so fun for me because it's history no one knows about. But yet it's part of our shared American story that no one's been talking about.
It's sad to me to hear you say that it's a history that no one knows about. And So We Walk started off as a six-week journey to retrace the path of your great-great-grandparents on the Trail of Tears, and that was the tragic forced relocation of more than 17,000 Cherokee from their homelands in the 1830s. My dad's side of the family actually came from Tahlequah, Oklahoma.
Goodness.
So,
yes.
I mean, that story, I mean, is not a story. That is a reality and part of American history. And it makes me sad that, you know, people mm-hmm. need to be remembered, you know, to remember this. But this started off as the documentary. We played a little bit of the end credits, but as a documentary that you produced and you turned it, or what was that journey?
I always wanted it to be a theater piece. And so it's always been a dream of mine to retrace my family's footsteps with my father. One of the things no one in my family talked about was where we had come from before the Trail of Tears, because it was so painful. And my father's great-great-grandmother, she was on the trail. And so she would always say all she remembered was death. Just so much mm-hmm. death, and that's all we knew.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to take my father back to where we started. I wanted to find out where we had come from and find our homestead, which I was, it's in the play, just how everything just kind of fell into place. And I found that my very first day, and I just grabbed this random binder and I located my family's homestead in one fell swoop of a page. And so, you know, from then I was able to find out which trail we were on. There were several different trails. Everyone thinks the Trail of Tears was just one big journey, but it's actually several different journeys that spanned over a year of time. And so the majority of my grandmother's family was on the northern route, so we were able to retrace the northern route. And my father went along with me. We were able to stand on the ground where members of our family died. One of the things that's not in the play, which I always share, is my father wasn't, he wanted to go, but he wanted to have like certain little concessions that I had to make in order for me to go on the trail and for him to go with me. And one was I couldn't hide behind my books and do research. And so I like to do research. It makes me safe. And so he relied heavily on this concept we call blood memory, which is your body knows. And so we would go to these places and I would be allowed to research them after we left. And so that was one of the little caveats he had of me going on the trail with me, is I couldn't do any research. And it was really amazing because I would have all these feelings and all these dreams, and then later I would do the research and I would realize, oh, that's the reason. This is a place where my ancestors died, or a place where someone got really sick and we had to leave. You know, it's all
the DNA
stuff.
Remembered.
It remembered.
Right?
Yeah. And so my father made me trust that, and it's something, you know, I've always had it in me, but I often shy away from it because it can be scary, but I've learned to embrace it and trust it. And basically the whole play is based on that blood memory.
Oh God, that sounds beautiful. It really does. You know, this is more than memoir, you know, it's also history, but it can't be easy to tell these stories or tell this particular story.
It's challenging at times because when I was on the trail, I had experienced some trauma myself and I wasn't processing it, or I was processing it but not with others. And one of the things I've learned about being on the trail, and I think there was a reason why the trail happened right after I had this terrible accident, was so that you learn how your community, you know, we're communal, we're tribal, and there's a Cherokee word called gadugi, where people come together to lift each other up. And you need that. That's how we heal. And I had been working with this foundation called the Chonta Sicha Foundation, where we collect boarding school stories from our survivors. Mm-hmm. And my father is a boarding school survivor. And, you know, one of the things that we work with different psychologists across the nation is after our elders give testimony about their experience, we pair them up with a psychiatrist so they can process it. And one of the things every survivor says is once you own your story, once you tell it your own way, then it doesn't control you anymore. You own it, and it's a great healing tool. And so I feel, you know, in the spirit of Gadugi, I went on this trail with my father. I had this traumatic experience that I wasn't talking about to anyone, especially not my family. And through the trail, I found that in order to heal, I had to reach out to my community, to my tribe, to my family. And so that comes through in the story as well.
Beautiful. It's just beautiful work. Versa, have you had a chance to see it?
No. Well, because we're in production at the same time.
Right.
She's actually just a day ahead of us. So her preview is the day before ours and her opening is the day before ours. So I'm
hopefully
I will
you'll
get
stay
to,
long enough.
Yeah, no, I get to see it after we open.
Well, you're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts talking with Delana Studi and Larissa Fasthorse. And we've been talking actually about And So We Walked. And I want to give that information. Portland Center Stage at the Armory presents And So We Walked, An Artist's Journey Through the Trail of Tears. Written and performed by Delana Studi, and it runs through May 13th, Tuesday through Sunday at 7:30 p.m. and Saturday and Sundays at 2 p.m. with some Thursdays at noon. You are very busy as a performer. All shows are in the Ellen By Studio at the Armory. That's located at 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. And for tickets, you can visit pcs.org. And I have all of that info at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And we are Facebook Live-ing it right now, and I just waved to whoever's watching on Facebook on the KBOO page. I can't believe that with this play, the exploration of this history will be complete. I mean, I'm sure you're continuing, your love of research will continue to grow, and the piece will grow. Will you be, I assume, since it's a solo show, you can take this anywhere?
Yes. So we're actually setting up a touring schedule as we speak.
Good for
you.
So
our next stop is Santa Fe at the Lanzac Theater there.
Well, I also understand that as an Asian American actor myself, that sometimes you can't, you know, get cast as often as you would like, and so this was an opportunity for you to empower yourself and be able to have a part that you can do anytime.
Absolutely. Well, I grew up in a very small town in Oklahoma, and no one ever came to my school to teach about creative career options. If you were lucky, you were going to get to work in the factory or become a school teacher. And both of those are honorable jobs, but no one really taught us that you could do something with your culture. And in fact, we were often encouraged not to do anything with our culture. And so it was very important to me to create this piece. When I started working on the piece, I thought it would travel to tribal communities and universities, and I didn't really think it would end up at the Portland Center Stage. So I'm very grateful for that, but the play wants to be bigger than I'm letting it be, and so I'm trying to allow it to be bigger, but at the same time, I created it so I could take it back to schools, so students like I was, who don't know you can use your culture and actually make a living promoting your culture and teaching about it, I wanted to encourage them to tell their own stories.
Well, there was also a quote in the American Theater magazine piece, which I actually have, that spoke about, Mary Catherine Nagle. Am I pronouncing her name right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I didn't get the phonetics. But often theater companies say, we don't want to tell Native American stories, and I'm paraphrasing here, because we want to tell contemporary stories, right, as opposed to historic stories, which I found very sad, you know, because I think that the history is contemporary. And so she actually had a quote about how she, you know, wanted to show that in Manhattan. And am I pronouncing that correctly,
yes,
too? So actually, I wanted to play a little clip from Mary Catherine Nagle's play. She was at a panel at OSF, at Oregon Shakespeare Festival, where she talks about how writing Manhattan came from a very personal experience as an attorney.
This is a very special play to me for many reasons, but it's kind of that one play that where I really fell in love with playwriting. It was like my first play, and you know, it's funny how life happens. I started writing it 6 years ago, and I was at that time living in Manhattan, working at a corporate law firm where we were doing RMBS litigation. So we were suing all the banks. We weren't suing Lehman because we were working on the bankruptcy. That's a whole other story. We were suing J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Bank of America. And so I was having to do depositions of the originators of the loans, the people doing the underwriting, the people doing the due diligence, the people checking, you know, all this stuff that you hear in the play. I was living it every day and just, you know, it, like it, breathing it in. And people, there was a lot of, that was, you know, kind of post 2008. So there was a lot of fallout about Wall Street. And I was just really struck by having all these conversations with the hundreds of different attorneys in my law firm about Wall Street, because we were kind of considered the cool attorneys that were going out there and suing Wall Street. You know, like the New York Times was doing profiles of the partners at my law firm. Like, you know, here are the sexy people challenging Wall Street. But like no one that I was working with knew that Manhattan was the word the Lenape used to call their home, Manhattan, where we were living, and that it was called Wall Street because the Dutch built a wall in 1654 to keep the Lenape out of their home. And so that just really struck me. And so when I had the opportunity to write a play in the Emerging Writers Group at the Public, I thought a lot of about stories I wanted to share from my family and from Cherokee Nation. Which I later did write a play about that. But I also had this moment of like, this is a story that needs to be shared here. And so it's kind of magical to have that be the genesis and then have the full, to bring it across the continent and to really do the world premiere here with this team, which is amazing. And I think, you know, like we all know, these stories, this is a very specific Lenape story. You know, this is a story that's true for so many of our nations, right? So many of our nations have stories of removal, forced removal, genocide, right? And how colonialism was forced upon us. And, you know, the telling of these stories is so new. Right? I mean, when you look across the United States, most theaters have never produced a single Native playwright. Now OSF has produced two. That's really quite phenomenal. And I also just want to say that what we're creating isn't new. The stories have always been with us. But these are the first times they're being presented in these kinds of spaces. And so I feel like there's a lot we're learning about ourselves and about the ways in which these stories are shared. And it's really exciting and sort of terrifying. Right? So just what a blessing, and thank you all for the support, and I am just so blessed to be working with everyone up here, as well as these phenomenal actors.
Oh, okay. I'm DeMay Roberts, stage and studio, and that was Mary Catherine Nagel talking about her play Manhattan, which is currently running at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and that's actually running in Ashland till October 27th. Lots of time to see that. You can get more info and tickets, as well as see their repertory schedule for all their shows at osfashland.org. And I wanted to include Mary Catherine because, you know, she couldn't be here today, but she will be here in Portland next week along with my guests here today, Larissa Fast Horse and Delana Studi, and they're going to be having a series of panel discussions, and the first one is April 9th at 7:30 p.m. They're all going to be talking about responsibility to represent at the Native American Youth and Family Center, NAYA. That's located at 5135 Northeast Columbia Boulevard in Portland, and it's moderated by Alyssa Macy of the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. And on April 10th at 5:30 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. they'll be talking at Portland Center Stage, and I have all that info at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. Wow, so much is going on. Larissa Fasthorse, I want to...
Can I just quickly say,
yes,
there,
yes,
is an additional talk that Monday afternoon,
oh, yes,
as well, that and I don't have the time and location in front of me at the moment, but there is a third talk that we're doing that day together with,
okay,
all three,
we'll get
of
that
us.
Information then, and be able to announce that as well. But you just had your first preview of the Thanksgiving play at Art Observatory Theater, and how did that go for you?
It went really well. It's a comedy, so changing completely from
Mary
Catherine and Delana.
Well, it shows the whole spectrum, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
You know?
So it's a contemporary comedy. It's a satirical play, satirical comedy, and it went super well. It's a, you know, I'm fortunate. It's a really funny play, and so we had a really good time at the first preview. And now it's about spending the week calibrating,
kind of tweaking things.
Yeah, well, and calibrating the difference between comedy and satire, right? So I use comedy to achieve the goals of satire. And so where do we find that balance to make sure that the goals of the satire are still come through and we have a good time together in the theater?
Well, I want to talk to you more about that, but for that other talk event is April 9th at 2 to 4 p.m. at the Old Church Concert Hall. And this is presented by, is it Age and Gender Equity, I believe. And so plenty of time to meet this historic moment, to be able to connect with some many people in our communities. And so, Larissa, you know, let's give a little background on the Thanksgiving play, because, again, I'm going back to this American Theater article in which, I believe it was in the article, which it's really hard to get produced quite often with, you know, Native American playwrights, but also a lot of, other playwrights of color, because there's an assumption that you can't find the actors within the community, that the theater community, you know, can't, you know, find the actors. So you wrote this play, Thanksgiving play, sort of as a response to that, didn't you?
Yeah. I mean, I will be clear that, you know, I'm very blessed. I make my full-time living as a playwright in American theater. So I have to throw out that caveat that I'm not complaining because I am really fortunate. I'm unusually fortunate for any woman of color, but especially for a Native American playwright, that this is all I do. And American theater has been very supportive of me. However, what happens is I work primarily under commission. So I get these plays commissioned and they get the first production, but then the subsequent productions are the ones that don't happen, the second, the third. And the perception is you can't cast Native American actors. I have one play that was only had one half Native American character in the play of four. And I was told in Arizona, a home of 22 federally recognized tribes, that it was uncastable.
Yeah, that seems a stretch there.
Yeah. So I gave myself the challenge of writing a play with four people who can present as white, who they can be any ethnicity, but they have to be able to pass as white. And that was a challenge I gave myself because I believe America, not only does it, as we were just discussing, have the understanding of what it is to be a Native American person in this country, but they also really want to understand. And so I'm trying to find a way to bring that information to theater audiences who actually really want it.
Well, so let's give a little background on the play itself, though. It's set in it's with parents in a school setting, right?
It's actually with educators.
Educators.
Yeah, none of these people actually are parents, which I think is part of the
problem. Oh, good.
The play itself, I mean, all my plays are metaphors for contemporary life, for what I experience. Yeah, so it's set with four well-meaning people that can appear to be white from the beginning, who are trying to create a politically correct Thanksgiving play for children during Native American Heritage Month. So they're trying to fulfill all these things and a bunch of grants and represent Native Americans accurately and all of that with clearly large blind spots.
Yeah, and hence the comedy ensues.
Mm-hmm.
But it says a lot about how you know, people are grappling with this, you know, this whole, the concept of Native American Month, Heritage Month, for one thing, even understanding
which
that there
November,
is one.
Which is November, by the way.
I know. And also just dealing with the sort of the legacy of what Thanksgiving means, you know, and it's not a great holiday for a lot of folks. So, you know, you poke fun at that.
Well, and also, you know, what's interesting in us talking a lot here about history is, you know, as a Native person, obviously Thanksgiving is a challenging holiday, although I 100% support a day set aside for gratitude. That's amazing. And I think we should do that every month. When I started doing the research on this play, I was shocked. I had no idea. Really, the Thanksgiving we talk about is a complete fiction. It was created after the Civil War by Abraham Lincoln to unite the North and the South. And it was created as a publicity act. And so this whole thing we hear about isn't actually an event. It's a fabrication created by the government to serve another purpose. And I think that's, you know, ultimately, you know, after the comedy and after the laughter, that's what we all need to think about.
And do you bring that out in the play too? That the whole concept is a myth?
Yes. Yeah. We talk about all the many different possibilities for the first Thanksgiving, which some of them are pretty shocking and some of them are really horrifying.
Yeah.
And I think it's important, though, that people understand that, you know, what you consider facts and what you consider history, well, who wrote it? Why did they write it? What was their motivation for it? And who are they leaving out of the story?
Well, Art Observatory Theater presents the world premiere of the Thanksgiving play by Larissa Fasthorse, directed by Luann Schooler. The show is in previews this week till Saturday, April 7th, when it premieres, world premieres, mm-hmm. and runs through April 29th. All shows are at the Morrison Stage, and that's located at 1515 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. For tickets, you can call their box office at 503-241-1278 or online at artistrep.org. And, there are, I understand, specific dates, there are tickets available for our Native American communities here.
Yes. We have a lot of amazing events going on around this play. So this Friday is Native American Night. So if there's Native folks that want to come, it's free for them Friday. And we're going to have events for them. We have different Native American performers, local performers performing in the lobby before many of the shows. So check the website, Instagram, Facebook, and see who's performing. We just had Blue Flames. We have Strike Nine coming. We have a bunch of traditional groups. We're going to have people selling Native work in the lobby. We're really doing an incredible outreach with the local community to make sure that their voices are being supported, their work is being supported through Artist Repertory Theater.
Oh, maybe we can get KABU to put it out on their newsletter, because we do have some Native American shows here on KABU.
And that would be great.
Yeah, so it'd be great to get the word out. So it's really interesting to me that you have the topic of representation on the panel that's going to be at NAYA at on April 10th. And so it's often discussed a lot with Asian American theater too about what representation means and underrepresentation, and then what kind of representation. Do you feel that, does it make it easier to get produced if you, for instance, have a mixture of white actors as well as Native American? Or do you feel that, perhaps your play, Delaina, would get produced if you were not, acting in it? I mean, what are some of the things that, you juggle with regarding representation and how to get represented? I know.
How long do we have?
We only have a few minutes. So maybe what's the number one thing that theaters could do regarding representation of Native American playwrights? Plays.
I think they need to understand, one, that they have Native people. Every single time I've had a theater company tell me that we don't have anyone Native to do this workshop, to do whatever, I say, okay, we can discuss that, but first I want you to reach out to your community. And every single time they said, oh, we have all these actors that we didn't know were Native American. Why didn't they know? Because they've never produced a Native play, so no one's ever asked.
So you are an activist when it comes to that.
I'm only in theater. Theater is my social activism. The play is lovely and fun, but to me, what I'm here to do is to create these relationships, to work with NAYA. We're bringing the play to NAYA, directly to the kids. We're creating all these incredible relationships. That's why I do theater, is to create the relationships between community and the Western world. That's what I'm here for. And so the part on the stage I love, but that's not actually that's only part of the journey for me.
I love hearing that. Mm-hmm. And how about you, Delaina?
No, I agree exactly. Like I said, we Walk is the first play I've ever written, and so I wrote it to go to tribal communities and universities for that reason. One of the things I have a problem with as a Native actor is most of the pieces are period pieces, so I don't fit what they think a Native person looks like, because I'm mixed. My mother's white, my father's full blood. And so, and then what gets me is I never get to audition for any non-Native roles. We're not seeing our Native actors for any other roles.
And that doesn't make any sense to me.
It makes no sense to me. Like, no. You're doing Chekhov, and yet...
It's like there's a box.
Yes, yeah. And you're not allowing these wonderful, talented Native actors to come in and audition for that, because that's not what you have in your mind for the Cherry Orchard. And it just blows my mind. And so, I would like to see more of our Native people being able to just audition across the board, just be seen as humans being, because that's where I think every minority group has had to fight for that, had to rise above that challenge of, we just want to be seen as people. And yes, we're going to bring our nativeness to the table whenever you cast us. And yes, it's going to be there, but you don't have to explain it. It's going to be who we are, because in our everyday life, we are out there just like everyone else, but no one thinks of us. They always think of us as some like exotic creature behind museum glass. And it's time that we break that glass. It's time that we start showing our Native people for the beautiful, diverse community that we have. And, you know, we do have a lot of talented actors that either get talent, you know, get their training from doing community theaters or doing powwows or doing Native plays in their communities. Or we also have several Native actors that are going to Juilliard and Yale. And so we have the training. So it just blows my mind that people aren't actively seeking it, or they choose to say that we're not quite at that level yet.
Yep. It's just breaking that perception, you know, that assumption that is also a myth.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
Right here.
Absolutely.
Right, heard it here on Stage and Studio. Well, it's been such a pleasure to talk with both of you. And there are so many opportunities, everyone who's listening right now, to be able to see these plays and to hear these playwrights speak live in person. So I have all of that info at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio. And I hope you check it out. And don't miss this historic convergence right here in Portland and also in Oregon. Delana Studi and Larissa Fast Horse, such a pleasure to talk with you today, and I wish we had hours and hours. But thank you so much for coming in today and for sharing your work. That's it for Stage and Studio. My thanks to engineer Ray Bodwell, and I'll have this show online later today at stageandstudio.org and kbu.fm/stageandstudio, as well as on iTunes, and you can like us on facebook.com/stage_and_studio. You can tweet me at @stage_and_studio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor One Word's Alive Tour on Thursday, April 5th, 7 p.m. at Specs Records and Tapes, 8216 North Denver Avenue in Portland. This in-store performance by One Word for his Alive Spring Tour will be followed by several sets from local hip-hop support, Lisa Vasquez, Burt Sienna, Valvoline, and Northern Draw. This is an all-ages show, again, all ages. That's One Word's Alive Tour at Specs Records, 8216 North Denver Avenue in Portland on Thursday, April 5th from 7 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.